Chapter 1. Young Statesman.
Premier Alex Campbell of Prince Edward Island emerged as the young statesman of the February 1968 conference. Here was a man who had nothing to gain and little to lose from the subjects under discussion, but rose above the parochial concerns of his province to show that his vision was wide enough to make him an important new father of Canada's reconfederation. Peter C. Newman, The Distemper of Our Times, 1968.
Dear Alex, we have been so proud of you when you've represented PEI so very capably at the meetings of all the premiers. And your speeches at the Canadian Club in Toronto were full of wisdom and good ideas for the future of the island and of Canada. You stood out among all the others at the February 1978 Conference of Premiers. I thought Premier Blakeney was the only one who could hold a candle to you. Eleanor Wheeler, retired public health nurse, Fernwood, PEI, to Alex Campbell, September 15, 1978.
In February 1978, Premier Alex Campbell of Prince Edward Island took part in a meeting of Canadian First Ministers at the National Conference Centre in Ottawa. This was his 18th such conference. By 1978, Campbell had been Canada's longest-serving First Minister for almost 6 years. When he first took office in 1966, at the age of 32, Campbell was the youngest person to be elected Premier in Canada in the 20th century. At the 1978 conference, in addition to being the most senior in office, Campbell was still the youngest in age. Alex Campbell's first 6 years as Premier were a time of leadership turnover in Canada. By 1978, the First Ministers collectively made up one of the most experienced such gatherings in Canadian history. Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau and Ontario's Bill Davis had each won 3 elections, as had Alex Campbell. 5 of the premiers had been elected twice: Gerald Regan of Nova Scotia, Richard Hatfield of New Brunswick, Alan Blakeney of Saskatchewan, Peter Lougheed of Alberta, and Frank Moores of Newfoundland. The group comprised many strong personalities, including René Lévesque, elected in November 1976 with a mission to achieve Quebec's separation from Canada. The topic of the 1978 conference was not national unity, it was the economy. Canada and other Western countries were dealing with an economic downturn after almost 3 decades of heady post-war expansion. In 1973-74, oil embargoes imposed by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries shook the world and exposed regional tensions and disparities within Canada, as oil prices quadrupled from $3 per barrel to $12 in the space of 15 months. In demographic terms, the surge of the baby boom had crested. Unemployment and inflation were both on the rise, as Canada's leaders struggled with what came to be known as stagflation. After 2 decades of robust expansion of social programs and public services, governments were worried about spiraling deficits. These were the conditions that set the stage for the February 1978 First Ministers' Conference. Alex Campbell might have looked upon the 1978 conference as an opportunity to grow. For the decade of the 1970s, Prince Edward Island was third among Canadian provinces for GDP growth, after Alberta and British Columbia. During Campbell's 12 years in office, his province's gross domestic product quadrupled. Moreover, the gap between Prince Edward Islanders' average incomes and those of other Canadians was reduced by more than 10 percentage points. On the fiscal front, Campbell's government had a string of 5 balanced or surplus budgets, and Prince Edward Island's debt-to-GDP ratio was reduced from a nation-leading 35% in the mid-1960s to 15% in 1978, equal to the national average and the lowest of the Atlantic provinces. While unemployment on Prince Edward Island was rising by 1978, it remained below 10% for an unprecedented 6th straight year.
Opening address to the 1978 conference.
Alex Campbell's opening statement was aimed at the far horizon and was openly critical of conventional thinking about the economy. Depending on the listener, Campbell's remarks were either hard-hitting or wistful. Prime Minister Trudeau, not known for handing out compliments to the premiers, commented that Premier Campbell had, in Trudeau's words, very brilliantly made the point that Canada was moving into a future that is likely to be very different from our past. Campbell opened by observing that, despite unprecedented statistical affluence, few political leaders would dare suggest to their electorate that Canadians were well off. After asking, "Why has the drive for material prosperity and the good life not provided us with a quality of life we so much desire?" he criticized the lack of innovative thinking or new ideas, saying, "Most public and private institutions continue to pursue avenues and remedies which are based on the implicit assumption that the future will mirror the past." Campbell protested that time-honored economic remedies have been simply dusted off, given a new cover, and presented as the means to maintain our momentum and pump another few drops out of a rapidly drying well. He turned to his fellow first ministers and said, "For 12 years now, I have participated in a great number of economic and social conferences. The similarity of solutions over that 12-year period is really quite astounding. Essentially, the same solutions have been advanced as the cure for our ailments. But strangely, our illness grows progressively worse." Campbell aimed his main criticism for Canada's economic ills at the international economy, which he described as a global game of economic chess, in which Canadians were being manipulated by massive external forces and foreign controls. He called for Canada, over the next several decades, to reduce our vulnerability by adjusting to what Campbell described as conditions more representative of the physical and social limits within which we exist, and build a society truly representative of Canadian hopes and dreams.
Mr. Chairman, we need a new vision. The one we have had for Canada is wrong. I propose that we, the leaders of governments, conceive of a new vision, one that revitalizes the smaller towns and cities of this nation, where people can live and grow both economically and spiritually. I see these communities made up of industrious, self-reliant, conserving people, employing high technology to manufacture useful goods. There are, among others, four major elements that are basic to this kind of Canadian society. The first element is a fundamental one. We must always be capable of providing ourselves with the basics of living, that is, food, clothing, and energy. No self-respecting nation should be vulnerable in these areas. The second element relates to the concept of a conserving society, that is, conscious of the principle of stewardship. This means that rather than exploit and waste our natural resources, we pass on to our children as well cared for an estate as we inherited. Thirdly, a new vision of Canadian society must focus upon an ever-increasing level of technology. This is the key to higher productivity, job creation, self-reliance, and export capability. This higher technology can no longer be borrowed, as was done during the first half of this century. It is too valuable. It is not being loaned free of charge. It must be homegrown. Otherwise, our economy will sink to the third step of a stagnant economy, that is, from an ownership economy where we are now, through a branch plant economy, to the warehouse economy. A fourth element necessary to a more desirable society is the reversal of the process of centralization. The costs of centralization to Canadians has, in a word, been enormous, both socially and economically.
Alex Campbell's remarks to the 1978 conference were not what might be expected from a premier who was 12 years into a successful mandate and within weeks of calling his fourth general election. He did not parade his record for the audience at home on Prince Edward Island, nor did he plead for special treatment. The themes of self-sufficiency, environmental stewardship, economic decentralization, and investment in homegrown technology were familiar to people who knew Campbell. As his province's longest-serving premier, Alex Campbell knew all too well about the impact of economic centralization on Prince Edward Island. During the 5 years before Campbell became premier, net migration from PEI, mainly of skilled workers and educated people pursuing better opportunities, amounted to the equivalent of 15% of the province's workforce. One of the most tangible measures of what Campbell achieved as premier was the fact that, for the first time in decades, the province experienced net positive migration for 7 consecutive years from 1972 to 1978. The 10% increase in the island's population between 1970 and 1978 was greater in proportional terms than for any period since Prince Edward Island joined Confederation in 1873. During Campbell's premiership, PEI's population would increase by 13,000, surpassing the province's total gain of 10,000 inhabitants for the 100 years before he took office.
Debate with Premier Davis.
An exchange between Campbell and Ontario's Bill Davis at the 1978 conference demonstrates both the openness and the tensions of Canada's Confederation in the 1970s. Strong personal relationships among the premiers helped to maintain a fluid and by times fractious consensus. The leaders felt free to take each other on critically in debate. On the second day, Davis was invited by Prime Minister Trudeau to open the discussion on commercial policy, which he did by noting, "I too was impressed by some aspects of Premier Campbell's observation that small is beautiful." Davis went on to say that while he supported this philosophy, it was more difficult to accomplish in Ontario, and that eventually somebody has to pay the bills. He observed, without sounding parochial, I hope, that the success of Ontario's manufacturing sector was important to other parts of the country. Davis later returned to the theme, saying, "Sure, we are interested in our own economic problems, but I would remind our colleagues, Mr. Prime Minister, that this province that I represent has been totally supportive of equalization ever since I have been around these conference tables." He emphasized Ontario's support for regional economic development and investment tax credits, and referred to a speech, for which I have been criticized at home, in which he urged the private sector to make investments in other parts of Canada besides Ontario, knowing that there could be a lower rate of return. Davis characterized these views as heresy in terms of the bottom line approach, but felt that economic considerations were outweighed by what he described as an obligation to understand what this country is all about. Shortly after Premier Davis concluded his remarks, Campbell rejoined, saying that he and Davis did not share the same understanding of decentralization. He told the conference that he was not suggesting that the industrial infrastructure of Ontario be dismantled and sent down to Prince Edward Island. Instead, he envisaged Canadians becoming more self-reliant in manufacturing goods with supply systems from the Atlantic provinces and from the West. Campbell said that he could see no reason why Nova Scotian tires could not go into the automobile made in Canada, and criticized the north-south, south-north pattern of trade as tending, in Campbell's words, to distort the ambitions of industrial strategies for the rest of Canada. Campbell acknowledged the continuing support of Ontario and other half provinces for equalization and other transfer payments, but cautioned, "Let me ungraciously suggest that this has tended to create in our country a social dependency and a financial dependency of welfareism in the underdeveloped regions." He said that Prince Edward Island was no longer here demanding more equalization or transfer payments. "We are demanding our equal right to be self-sufficient in our activities, and we are not limiting this ambition to the growing of potatoes." Campbell said that he wanted to destroy the myth that Ontario industry could only decentralize to other regions if they were prepared to accept a lower rate of return. He said that his vision of decentralization would identify manufacturing opportunities in the regions as part of a Canada-wide supply system of small-scale operations built on high quality and utilizing a high level of technology. Campbell concluded by saying, "I am very optimistic that this is a true path and a good path for us to be pursuing."
Growth and development.
During his 12 years as premier, Alex Campbell's top priority was to lead his native province toward greater self-sufficiency. This was more easily said than done. When he came to power in 1966, provincial finances were in a perilous state. Prince Edward Island was the most indebted province in the country per capita, with much of its borrowing in short-term debentures. National financial institutions warned against attempting to issue bonds, as the markets would not welcome long-term offerings from the province. By 1969, PEI had floated bonds, balanced the provincial budget, and signed a 15-year comprehensive development agreement with the federal government. Between 1969 and 1975, Prince Edward Island experienced a relative boom, with a run of 5 balanced or surplus budgets, a turn to better times in agriculture, substantial growth in tourism, and robust programs for improved housing, land consolidation, infrastructure investments, and a transformation of PEI's educational system. These years also saw substantial growth in the Prince Edward Island Public Service, including increases in salaries and benefits for public sector workers as they closed the gap with counterparts in other maritime provinces. After 1974, self-sufficiency took on a different emphasis, with Campbell leading a small-as-beautiful, conservation-oriented response to the global energy crisis. During this period, public service growth was frozen and priority placed on private sector expansion of new and traditional industries. While Prince Edward Island fared relatively well during this period, it nonetheless experienced a slowdown, at the same time as public expectations and the cost of government continued to rise. These were the challenges that brought Canada's leaders together at the February 1978 conference, and that prompted Alex Campbell to ask, "What has happened to the great Canadian dream?" Prince Edward Island and Canada were different places when Campbell became Premier in July 1966 than they were when he stepped down in September 1978. The changes did not come all at once, nor did they come out of the blue. Campbell's success in negotiating the Federal-Provincial Comprehensive Development Plan had its roots in the advocacy of his predecessor premiers, including his father, Thane A. Campbell, who served as Premier of Prince Edward Island from 1936 to 1943. In 1938, Thane Campbell presented PEI's case before the Rowell-Searwall Commission, which laid the foundation for cost-shared programs that followed the Second World War. Alex Campbell's predecessor, Walter Shaw, embarked on a program of industrialization, drawing on regional development policies and resources that had their roots in Walter Gordon's Royal Commission of 1955 to 57, and in Diefenbaker-era programs aimed at restructuring Canadian agriculture and opening up new regions and frontiers. While the heavy political lifting for family allowances, old age pensions, and unemployment insurance took place during the Mackenzie King era, the financial and distributional impact of these programs took effect in the 1960s and 70s. During Alex Campbell's years as Premier, direct government transfers to individual Prince Edward Islanders rose eightfold, from $21 million in 1965 to $167 million in 1978. Of the 1978 transfers, three-quarters, or $122 million, came through federal sources. Commitments to equalization that were confirmed in 1967, building on foundations going back to the Great Depression and to Confederation itself, saw transfers to PEI rise from $10 million in 1965 to $72 million in 1978. When Medicare came into effect, with PEI joining in July 1970 after years of negotiation, the precedents for the 50-50 shared cost program were found in hospital insurance programs introduced by the Saint Laurent government and in Saskatchewan's pioneering example. The Canada Assistance Plan was being implemented based on arrangements finalized under Lester Pearson's leadership. There was a new robustness in arts and culture, with policy roots in the work of the Massey Royal Commission from 1949 to 51 and the celebration of Canada's centennials. Total government support for Canadian museums, art galleries, and related institutions increased almost fourfold between 1964 and 1970. Prince Edward Island celebrated 3 centennials in 9 years, in 1964, 1967, and the 1973 anniversary of Prince Edward Island becoming Canada's 7th province.
Societal changes.
The rekindling, with plenty of sparks, that took place in Canada in the 1960s and 1970s was not all about government. If anything, political leaders and public services were being pushed to keep pace with surging social and economic conditions. Canadians were breaking down barriers and exploring new possibilities. Women were entering the paid workforce and seeking equality. Between 1961 and 1981, the rate of participation by women in the Prince Edward Island paid workforce went from under 25% to almost 50%. Baby boomers were coming of age, bringing fresh potential and expanded appetites and expectations. During the 20 years between 1946 and 1965, there were 8.2 million babies born in Canada. Education systems struggled to respond to a tidal wave of new demand. Enrollments in Canadian post-secondary education quadrupled between 1950 and 1970, while the number of primary and secondary school students more than doubled. In the Prince Edward Island election of 1970, one-fifth of electors had the right to vote for the first time. Voter turnout was a remarkable 87.3%. Dramatic shifts in education and the workforce were a reflection of broader societal changes. Restrictions based on religion were challenged or simply opened up. Long-standing strictures, such as those discouraging dating and marriage across religious lines, were ignored by a new generation. Television became influential and pervasive. By 1965, 92% of Canadian households owned television sets, surpassing the percentage of homes that had telephones or installed baths and showers. Perhaps no development was more revolutionary than the new availability of birth control pills and devices, unless it was the automobile. The number of registered vehicles on PEI quadrupled between 1946 and 1966, and it doubled again by 1978. By 1960, Prince Edward Island had more paved roads per capita than any province in Canada. According to island historian Edward MacDonald, pavement made life larger. The social and economic context faced by the Campbell government on coming to office was dramatically underscored by the fact that between 1941 and 1971, Canada lost two-thirds of its farms while increasing agricultural production. During these three decades, the percentage of Canada's population living in rural areas dropped from 46% to 24%. For Prince Edward Island, these changes were revolutionary, as the proportion of the province's labor force employed in agriculture plummeted from more than 53% in 1941 to 12.5% in 1971. Still, PEI remained Canada's most rural province, with well over half of its 1971 population living outside urban centers.
Political leadership.
Between 1966 and 1978, Alex Campbell served with a total of 26 premiers and two prime ministers. Campbell's premiership would be a come-the-moment, come-the-leader story with few parallels in Canadian history. He pursued an agenda of epical transformation while building a political record as PEI's longest-serving premier, never suffering defeat through four elections in a province known for its closely balanced two-party democracy. The Campbell government modernized the school system, created a provincial university and a new community college, centralized and equalized property taxation, introduced Medicare, built a modern public service, and reformed the judicial system. They revamped family services and industrial relations, and undertook a massive housing initiative, and acted on energy, environment, land use, heritage, and many other areas. A highlight was the Comprehensive Development Plan, a 15-year federal-provincial agreement bringing an historic infusion of resources, policy development, and institution building. Many have asked how Campbell was able to achieve so much in such a short period of time. It wasn't easy. For their first 2 years in office, the Campbell government could barely meet the biweekly payroll. They started with five of the worst years ever for PEI agriculture. 1971 was worse than the Great Depression. The world energy crisis hit Prince Edward Island harder than the rest of Canada, as an island province entirely dependent on oil for both electricity and heat. All Canadian governments struggled with the 1974-75 global recession and spiraling inflation. The Campbell government's greatest asset was that they had lots of young people who were starting careers and families, and people of all ages who sought a better life. Campbell inspired people to believe they were getting ahead and brought forward policies that turned those beliefs into reality. At the same time, he dealt with a PEI electorate accustomed to tight two-party races and a province unaccustomed to the scale and pace of changes that were being brought forward. The most sustained criticisms of Alex Campbell's premiership were that there was too much change, that it came too fast, that there was too much government, or that the changes were insufficiently communicated to islanders. Alex Campbell's strength as a leader came from two sources. The first was his magnetic ability to relate to people, to read them, to listen, and to care. He was at his best one-on-one. His sincere interest in people translated into loyalty, trust, and votes. It translated into good judgment and fresh policy initiatives, and a drive to change things for the better. Campbell's second source of strength lay in his commitment as a Prince Edward Islander and Canadian. He cared deeply and intuitively about his province and country, and about the need to seize opportunities to move ahead, including squaring up to underlying challenges or differences. Campbell moved beyond long-standing religious-based distinctions, welcomed new levels of involvement by women and young people, and gained new prominence for Prince Edward Island at regional and national tables, where he was appreciated for his openness and good nature, as much as for his substantive contributions. Campbell didn't mind controversy or taking on work. In addition to his role as Premier, he served at critical times as Minister of Development, Minister of Agriculture and Forestry, Minister of Justice and Attorney General, and Minister of Cultural Affairs. Throughout his time as Premier, he was effectively Minister responsible for intergovernmental affairs, leading the province's external dealings on a wide array of issues. While Campbell normally left his ministers to run their portfolios, he took the lead for government when things heated up. In response to the 1970s energy crisis, Campbell became founding chair of PEI's Institute of Man and Resources, an innovative think tank for renewable energy and conservation. It was Premier Campbell who stood in the Legislative Assembly to announce the decision to create a provincial university to a mainly hostile gallery. He faced a 1969 gathering of 1,200 constituents lobbying for PEI's new community college to be located in his home riding of Summerside, and a 1971 meeting of 600 citizens and community leaders, unanimous in their view that Charlottetown should retain a separate school district. Neither meeting got what it wanted, as Premier Campbell articulated the broader public interest. His effectiveness in doing so was reflected in landslide electoral victories in 1970 and again in 1974.
A people person.
Campbell was prepared to step out in front on major policy matters or controversial issues. He challenged Islanders to think about energy and environment, the economy, land use and ownership, public finances, heritage, education, and many other subjects. What may appear from the tightly controlled political perspectives of today, like a politician moving out of his comfort zone, was in reality Campbell following his natural political instinct to get closer to the people. The one-on-one stories are legion, of Premier Campbell picking up hitchhikers, wading into protest rallies, sliding into an open stool at the coffee counter, or heading to the kitchen at the end of a political meeting to thank the ladies. Jack McAndrew, who wrote speeches for Campbell through his two biggest electoral victories in 1970 and 1974, says that Campbell was one of the greatest one-on-one campaigners I've ever encountered. He loved campaigning. When he went into a room and shook that first hand, it was like an alcoholic's first drink in the morning. He had such clear and obvious sincerity, I've never seen anyone who could do it as well. Campbell's longtime executive assistant in Eminence Gris, Andy Wells, agrees, saying, "When people came to the Premier's office for a meeting, he gave them his total attention and sincere interest. They knew it and were always impressed." Campbell was once challenged as to whether it was a good use of his time to stop by the side of the road in the springtime to ask fishermen about their catch. He responded that he was interested to know about the fishing. Plus, the fishermen had family, friends, and neighbors who would hear before nightfall about the Premier stopping to inquire. Campbell explained, "That's how it's done, showing you care."
Regional and national stages.
Campbell spoke out and showed leadership on regional and national stages. Shortly after becoming Premier in 1966, he surprised a national meeting of the Liberal Party by introducing a motion of confidence in Prime Minister Lester Pearson. It was adopted unanimously and had the effect of derailing an Ontario motion calling for regular leadership reviews, which many saw as an initiative to move Pearson off the stage. In 1972, Campbell conducted a national speaking tour addressing Canadian club audiences from Cape Breton to Vancouver, with a series of challenging talks on the theme, Confederation, Its Past and Future. He spoke in Montreal about Canadian unity, his third address to a Montreal audience in 5 years. He spoke in Vancouver about equalization and the Canadian economy, in Edmonton about urbanization, in Regina about land use and ownership, in Winnipeg about interprovincial cooperation, and in St. John about communications and the shape of the future. Campbell ended his 1972 tour with an address to the Women's Canadian Club in Vancouver titled, "How Well Has Confederation Served Canada?" The speaking tour, which was scheduled for months in advance, took place during the 1972 federal election campaign. While Campbell spoke forcefully on questions of national interest, no one accused him of taking partisan stands or of interfering in the election. Perhaps his riskiest speech of 1972 was an address in Charlottetown to the national meeting of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. Campbell felt that it would be insincere to speak as if he were a teetotaler, so he opted to encourage the organization to consider modernizing its stance to favor the use of alcohol in moderation. He later reported with characteristic good humor that he had been received like a skunk at a picnic. There was regular speculation that Campbell would enter federal politics. While he was offered opportunities to do so, including personal invitations from Prime Minister Trudeau, he preferred the provincial arena, where he was firmly in charge and enjoying himself. During his cross-country tour in October 1972, Campbell had an opportunity to take the pulse of the country. He sensed and feared that the federal government and the Liberal Party were becoming too centralized. This concern was borne out by the October 30th federal election results, with Pierre Trudeau's Liberals barely hanging on to power with 109 seats, compared with 107 for the Progressive Conservatives. Of the 109 Liberal seats, all but 12 were from Quebec and Ontario. The Conservatives won more seats than the Liberals in every province except Quebec. On November 7th, 8 days after the election, Campbell wrote a lengthy and delicate letter to Prime Minister Trudeau to, in Campbell's words, express some political and election thoughts from a maritime point of view. He identified two fundamental problems, the first being that, in both government and party affairs, there is a tendency to centralize, not only activities and physical matters, but also thinking. The second problem identified by Campbell was the hothouse of Ottawa. As he explained, constant exposure to the somewhat artificial and superheated, if I may use those terms, interpretation of Canadian thoughts, concerns, and aspirations, as seen in the national capital, can eventually warp and distort one's judgment. Campbell went on to suggest, with delicacy and forthrightness, that the single most significant issue in the last election was the voters' understanding and interpretation of the Prime Minister. The letter was marked personal and confidential and offered this assessment.
Dear Prime Minister, it is my view that the single most significant issue in the last election was the voters' understanding and interpretation of the Prime Minister. I believe most Canadians viewed the Prime Minister as a bright, articulate, and able leader, but a leader remote from the individual Canadian, a leader too involved with the day-to-day operations of government to become intimately concerned with the aspirations, desires, fears, and hopes of the average Canadian, a leader unaware of the effects that taxes, cost of living, welfare, wages, unemployment, and a myriad of other concerns have upon the individual, and a leader with rational approaches to problems for which the average Canadian often entertains irrational concepts.
Campbell did not receive a written response. The two leaders saw each other frequently over the subsequent 6 years, including several visits by Trudeau to Prince Edward Island in 1973. Like other gatherings of first ministers in the latter half of the 1970s, the February 1978 conference covered a lot of ground and featured diverging views. After 2.5 days, the first ministers issued a communique in which they undertook to curb public sector spending, ask the Economic Council of Canada to monitor the economy, pursue large-scale infrastructure investment in Saskatchewan oil sands and Labrador hydroelectric power at Gull Island, and hold ongoing discussions among officials about selected economic sectors. The sharpest break in the apparent harmony came during a discussion of negotiations for the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, then underway in Geneva. The premiers, led by Alberta's Peter Lougheed and BC's Bill Bennett, asked for more say in Canada's bargaining position. Journalist Jeffrey Stevens wrote that Prime Minister Trudeau changed his tone of sweet reasonableness and explained icily that in a federal system, each level of government had its own responsibilities. Trudeau went on to tell the persistent premiers, "We're consulting you a lot more in this than you have consulted us on matters of local concern." Alex Campbell joined the discussion briefly, conceding that it was the role of the federal government to negotiate trade deals, but asking, "Against what national will?" From his earliest appearances at First Minister's tables, Alex Campbell was recognized for his good nature and contributions to consensus building, which were, if anything, enhanced because he represented the smallest province. During the November 1967 Confederation of Tomorrow Conference, called by Ontario Premier John Robarts out of frustration that Ottawa was not moving quickly enough on constitutional review, Peter Newman wrote in the Toronto Star that Campbell is turning out to be one of this conference's real statesmen. On the second day of the conference, after not much progress had been made, Campbell made a special statement indicating that PEI was prepared to meet the problem of constitutional change head-on, saying, "If a goodly portion of Canadians regard the Constitution as a barrier to their development, then it is a problem, and the unity of our country depends in great measure on the settlement of these vital issues." He concluded by asking Quebec Premier Daniel Johnson 10 pointed questions about the Quebec brief. Ben Malkin wrote in his Ottawa Report column that Campbell's statement seemed to break the logjam, noting that much of the subsequent dialogue turned to constitutional relations, and particularly to relations between English and French-speaking Canada. John Defoe wrote that Campbell was a forceful presence throughout the conference. Following the February 1969 Constitutional Conference, Dave McIntosh of the Canadian Press described Campbell as probably the most popular man at the conference. He said of Campbell, "He is never abashed among the giants as a spokesman for only 100,000 fierce islanders."
If you don't get elected.
As they left the Ottawa Conference Centre in February 1978, the First Ministers had more on their minds than the economy. Much attention was focused on Quebec's anticipated referendum on sovereignty association, especially with René Lévesque's theatrical walkout and press conference 3 hours before the end of the meeting. Lévesque objected to what he claimed was stage managing of the conference by Ottawa to obtain video footage for an anticipated federal election. Trudeau and Lévesque were not the only leaders with upcoming votes in prospect. Within 15 months, there would be general elections in 7 of the 11 jurisdictions represented, with Prince Edward Island being the first to go to the polls. On March 29th, Alex Campbell would prorogue the legislature and call a provincial election, seeking a fourth and historically unprecedented mandate to lead his province as premier. As Campbell told his principal secretary, Leonard Bradley, "If you don't get elected, you can't do anything else."